This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Then call 800-462-7413. Zorba, along with our callers, all with some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, children's cereals. Are they as bad as we think they are? No, they're even worse.
Oh, my. That coming up.
Not all cereals, but a lot of cereals and vitamin D. Should we be taking more vitamin D? What about adults? What about the new recommendations for children? Again, vitamin D, the important vitamin of the decade.
Our medical myth buster later on in the hour. What's our recipe?
Grilled turkey and garlic sauce. Wonderful recipe. Turkey is great. I kind of think of turkey this time of year. It just kind of is in the back of my brain. This is a great turkey recipe that even you will like, Tom. And we have it in the studio.
Our chef's assistant.
Everybody can taste it.
Our chef's assistant, Adam Friedrich, has prepared it for
us. That's right. So you only have a bite of our grilled turkey with garlic sauce.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have a little problem, or has become a big problem, where I'd be working on some pieces on my trombone, and during the summertime when we don't have any school, I'd be practicing, sometimes 6 to 8 hours a day.
Hmm.
And I had this problem where I couldn't even hit the higher registers, which is the higher notes on the sheet, because my jaw would just hurt so bad from, practicing. I don't know if it's from practicing so long or from practicing the higher registers.
Well, can I ask how old you are and how long you've been playing the trombone?
I am 23 years old and have been playing for 10 years.
Is this a new problem for you?
Yeah, it just hit me as soon as I, probably about 2 years after I started college.
Yeah. When you say the high registers, are you trying to do super high registers, or is this just normal high registers for the trombone?
Well, for any musicians out there, it's first chair. So they'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
higher
about,
than
too.
Usual.
As a not-so-good French horn player, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't understand why your jaw would go after all this. Of course, 8 hours a day, that's a lot of practicing.
Not as a normal, though. I mean, I know plenty of students to do the same thing.
As a non-French horn player, I'm sitting here thinking, high register, low register, registration, college. My brain is going all over the place. But obviously, you have to manipulate your jaw and your mouth in a different way to hit the high register. So you practice 8 hours a day, not at one time.
I wouldn't say 8 hours every day. I'd say it would be at least, and this is only during the summer, though, at least, 6 hours. And it would be throughout the course of the day.
Right. Well, that's a long time to engage in any type of a repetitive activity, and that's what it fits into. It fits into sort of repetitive injury syndromes that we often get with a variety of things. We get it with playing the, working on the computer, working in a factory, and of course with a musical instrument of this sort. But let's look at the jaw. Where's the pain? Is it in the back of the jaw, in the front of the jaw, in the cheek muscle? Where do you feel that discomfort?
It's in the back.
It's in the back. And
it really starts to hurt when, either when I'm trying to play really high or if I, take my mouth off the mouthpiece and try to open it all the way.
Okay. Now, is there any time that you're not playing for a day or two? Do you ever have a day where, you don't do anything at all, or is it pretty much every single day that you play?
I'll take, 2 days off a week.
What happens when you do that? Do you have pain?
When I try to open my mouth all the way, it'll be in really severe pain, or sometimes it'll... Actually, I've had it to where it would even pop most of the time that I try to eat.
Okay. So what do you take for it? What have you been taking for it now?
Just pain medicine. I really don't put any hot press on or anything.
Uh-huh.
I just kind of deal with it.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of issues here. First of all, you may have TMJ, temporal mandibular joint syndrome. And what this is it's really a stretching of the joint between the jaw and the skull. So it's similar to what happens with soccer players when they have knee problems, with football players when they have knee and hip problems. You have the same problem in this little joint that's occurring. And what's happening is because you're clenching and pushing, all the muscles around that joint are also exhibiting the pain. So a couple of recommendations. First of all, what I would try for the next 3 to 4 weeks is I would try an anti-inflammatory drug and see if I can get rid of the inflammation in the joint. Easiest, best thing, go out and buy Aleve. Name brand, forget it. Generic, just as good. But take two tablets twice a day, whether you have pain or not, every single day for 1 month. And the reason is you reduce the inflammation in the joint. That's a goal. And see what happens. If that gets rid of the pain and discomfort, well, then you may have to, during, you know, the summer season when you're working on your, when you're playing your trombone, you may have to take it. But that's one recommendation. The other recommendation is you check with your dentist and see whether or not you've got TMJ. Because if you do, sometimes there are mouth guards that you wear at night that help you and that relax your jaw. And that may be the issue. It may be also clenching your jaw at night. And sometimes you wear the you do clench your mouth. So it's essentially a little contraption. They're often not too expensive. And they relax the jaw at night so you don't clench it. Because you're clenching it during the day and you're clenching it during the night. And that can produce the pain and discomfort. So two Aleve twice daily. Try it for a month. Go to the dentist, look at a mouth guard, and you've got to keep on playing.
Yeah. You're in a school in Jacksonville. What school?
UNF.
And you're in the school band, I'm assuming.
Well, actually, I just graduated, so not anymore, but probably one of the best jazz programs in the country.
Oh, yeah.
And UNF students hearing that will agree with me right now.
Yeah, I have heard great things about UNF and great things about your band. So thanks much. Good luck. And as I said, the TMJ for to relax the jaw at night and a leave. And good luck.
All right, Norbert, thank you very much.
Sure, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to Austin, Texas. Hi.
Hello, Zorba and Tom.
What's up?
My question is more one of curiosity than concern, and it may sound a bit facetious, but it's not. It has to do with flatulence.
Mm-hmm.
My 14-year-old son is a competitive swimmer and has been since he was 6 years old, actually. And I've noticed in the past 6 months something that seems strange to me, which is that after swim practice, which is about 2 hours, he changes clothes quickly and gets in the car to go home. We have about a 20-minute ride to our house. Almost like clockwork with precision, when he gets in the car, he's like a balloon that starts letting out air. It's over with within 3 minutes, and it happens, like I say, like clockwork almost every time. Is there something about swimming that could be related to this?
Yeah. Well, there's an easy solution to it. Just open up the car windows.
Well, actually, that's the other strange thing. There's no what I would call unpleasant odor. It's just like a balloon letting out air, and I'm wondering, could something to do with the breathing technique or something to be getting air into him, or is it just some weird coincidence?
No, you hit it right in the head. It actually has to do with flatulence is from a number of things. It's basically from the little bacteria and other things that are in our gut that produce things, and those tend to be the flatulent gas odors that we find offensive tend to be more of those. But you can also get flatulence by swallowing large amounts of air. And so if you swallow large amounts of air, as he is probably doing, he's filling up his gut with air. And when he gets in the car, he relaxes. He relaxes the sphincter in his anus, and voila, the air comes out. And it reminds me of a guy who was called La Fouf. And La Fouf, Tom is laughing at me, La Fouf was an entertainer in the 1860s and 1880s. And he could swallow large amounts of air and would go around, I kid you not, and entertain in the crown heads of Europe on the stage.
Would he play tunes?
He played tunes. He played tunes. La Fouf played tunes. And when I was in college, I read about him. I read a biography of La Fouf. And it was around the 1860s, 1880s when that type of entertainment, before there were guy flicks, was extremely popular. So your son would be an example of somebody who could follow in La Fouf's footsteps. And I would highly recommend that you buy him a book. You go, I'm sure it's on Amazon.com, and you do Wikipedia, and you teach him about La Fouf. But that's what he's doing. He's swallowing large amounts of air, and he's not using it for entertainment purposes, I don't think.
No. In fact, I think it's a bit embarrassing to him.
Well, you're the dad. You're the dad. I mean, you know, you changed his diaper. He shouldn't be embarrassed in front of you.
Well, at least he has an alternate career and doesn't have to study his Latin so hard.
Well, good luck. I hope he does well on his swimming.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the call. You're a font of information.
A font of information. La Fouf. I mean, how could you forget reading that biography in college?
800-462-7413. So, cereals, I'm assuming sugar cereals, maybe aren't so good for the kids?
Well, I mean, we've known for years that sugar cereals are not good for kids. I mean, is there anything new about this? No.
Right.
What's new is that Consumer Reports did a very interesting study. First of all, when you look at the side of the cereal, and it says a serving, when kids pour the cereal in their bowl in America, they don't pour a serving. They pour two servings.
All right.
So it's not a serving. It's a serving and a half or two and a half of the servings.
Yeah.
Then you look at the side of it. So it shows how much sugar there is. And you go, well, that's a serving that's not so bad for my kid. Well, you add up a serving and a half or two servings, and you find that cereals such as Post Golden Crisp and Kellogg's Honey Smacks, okay, have 50% sugar. In other words, half of the calories in there are 50% sugar. Then look at a – I mean, this is on Consumer Reports. You can go to consumerreports.org or come to our website, zorbapastor.org, and we'll list some of these for you. If you look at Kellogg's Corn Pops – I used to eat those as a kid – 12 grams of sugar, and get this, dietary fiber, zero. Zero. It's candy. So yeah. Kellogg's Corn Pops are candy. Now, there are a number of cereals that come up on top. Cheerios, which is the old standby, happens to come very, very well on top. 3 grams of fiber per serving, not bad, and 1 gram of sugar. So that's one that is a reasonable one to look at. And Quaker Oats Life cereals, okay, and Honey Nut cereal Cheerios are also okay. But the reality is we are giving our children candy bars for breakfast with milk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for some of these cereals, you might as well give 2 or 3 chocolate chip cookies with milk and send them off to school. It's outrageous.
When I was a kid, it was the day before they had sugar cereals. That's how old I am. And I used to
I mean, your mother just didn't buy them. They always
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't have sugar cereals? Really?
No, I'm really feeling old. There weren't any sugar cereals. But I used to take the sugar bowl, take a spoon, and sprinkle a couple
of sugar.
Was I putting as much sugar?
Half as much. That's what the studies show. When you have sugar cereal, you essentially eat twice as much sugar. When you leave it to do ad lib, that's what we mean, as needed.
Yeah.
And you put kids next to a cereal, and they can sugar it themselves. They add half as much sugar as the manufacturer has. Now, get this: the manufacturers know our taste. If you look at Honey Smacks, a perfect example, a major cereal that is sold in Germany and Switzerland, they have about 20% less sugar in that cereal. So in other words, they are putting the sugar in the cereals because it sells, and it's time for us to demand as consumers to stay down there, just like trans fat, how much sugar is in this cereal. And it's in really tiny print
now,
on the back.
Let me take Consumer Reports a little bit to task here. I'm looking through their report on this. It says, for consumers who can't make the switch to a low-sugar cereal, they suggest using smaller bowls or single-serving sizes to limit over-pouring and potentially overeating. Can't make the switch?
That's right. Can't make
can't
the switch.
Make the,
how, they do not have faith
how,
in America where we can make the switch to low-sugar cereals. We can do it. We can do it. If we all get together and we try, as a country, as a nation, we can move to low cereals. You know what they're doing? They're setting the bar so low, they're saying some people can't make the switch.
That's ridiculous. Have a
bowl. Yes, it is.
800-462-7413. A listener now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, my vice is not sugar, it's caffeine.
Okay.
I'm a new mommy. I had a baby 8 months ago.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Boy or girl?
A little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and he's a lot of fun. So we're older parents, and kind of this has been a real adventure for us. So I was a model pregnant woman. I gave up just everything you're supposed to give up, caffeine and wine and everything else, and tried to eat a healthy diet. I'm a pretty healthy eater anyway. And people who knew me would have thought that wine would have been really difficult for me to give up, and it was not. What was so hard to give up was the caffeine. That was tough. Now, after he arrived, I've been breastfeeding for 8 months, and I'm a working mom, so that's tough. And he has not been sleeping through the night. So, of all the things that I need in my life, caffeine is one of them. So that's been really difficult. I read what I want to know is how much is a safe level of caffeine to have, because it's been extremely difficult to give up the caffeine, not the wine at all. So haven't missed that a bit, but it's the caffeine that I really miss.
Well, caffeine, when you look at it, caffeine is the number one drug that's used in the world.
So I'm a drug addict. I'll admit it.
You are definitely a drug addict from caffeine. That's it.
You're addicted.
It's the number one drug to use. You know, there's no evidence that caffeine is bad for a growing child. There really isn't any evidence. We know that alcohol, in small amounts is excreted in breast milk. I mean, we know that. I mean, it's a teeny tiny amount. It's not a large amount. We worry about alcohol during pregnancy because of the growing brain and the child, and so we recommend no alcohol during pregnancy. That's easy to define. Zero. Zero is really easy. But from a caffeine point of view, you're probably not going to keep your child up with the amount of caffeine that may be excreted in your milk. It's a really tiny, small amount. It's more likely for your baby to be kept up at night with gas, gas. And if you eat cruciferous vegetables such as broccoli or cauliflower, which are more likely to produce gas in a child, that's more likely to keep your baby up. So I think you can drink as much caffeine as you want to. I mean, why do you think you have to limit your caffeine?
Well, here I read a study that's a good segue. I read a study recently from a credible source, and I wish I had written it down, and I now can't remember where it was. But it said that where the adult body will get rid of the caffeine in your system, so that if I have a cup or two in the morning, by evening it's all gone. In a baby or in an infant, they said it has more of a cumulative effect because they don't have the ability to get rid of the caffeine.
Absolute garbage.
That
is absolute 100% garbage, hokum. It's garbage that's basically perpetrated by the anti-caffeine lobby, who I have to tell you, are lots of people in the world. There are lots of people who are against caffeine. They think it's bad, it's evil, it's sinful. If you have caffeine, it's an awful thing to do. It's a drug. Realize it's a drug. It's in a variety of beverages. If you want to take it, fine. Now, caffeine in large amounts for teenagers, that's a very special issue. If you look at Red Bull and a lot of drugs of that nature, they give huge amounts of caffeine. Kids are hyped up anyway, and that can affect their behavior, and we know that. We know that caffeine can affect adult behavior. It wakes us up. That's why we take it in the morning. So I think reasonable amounts of caffeine are fine so that you're not jittery. But the idea that it accumulates and builds up in your baby and your baby doesn't excrete it, believe me, Mother Nature is fabulous. The kidneys of a baby are great. The liver of the baby is great. That's where things get excreted. And essentially, the kidneys will excrete the caffeine in your baby just like they do with you. If you drink a cup of caffeine, let's assume it's 180 to 200 milligrams of caffeine, which is what it is in a dark brewed cup of caffeine. Out of your breast milk, I would guess half a milligram, maybe a milligram.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, your baby's not getting 10 milligrams. It might even be a tenth of a milligram or a hundredth. I don't know the number, but it's a really, really tiny amount. And believe me, children excrete things much quicker than adults. I mean, they're much more likely. I mean, your child's kidney is actually much more robust than your kidney, and they do a fabulous job of excreting these things. So, no, you can drink your caffeine, and you can drink it with impunity. You'll be fine.
Well, I have to go and pour myself a cup of coffee.
Enjoy.
I love you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye. Zorba, get your answers ready because it's time for another edition of Rapid Fire, straight from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. Off we go. Sally, outside of St. Louis, would like to know, is the electromagnetic field in electric blankets dangerous?
No.
Moving on to Gloria in Spokane, Washington, who is pregnant and wondering what fish, if any, is safe to eat during her pregnancy.
Well, for that, you have to go to the FDA website. There are fish that are safe, fish that are not safe. We'll put that on the ZorbaPastor.org website for you to connect to.
Joe is a fan of the show and heard our chat about smoking and hair loss. He asks, does nicotine gum promote hair loss?
Not at all. Nicotine gum promotes abstinence from tobacco.
Finally, Marianne from the Pacific Northwest is a bit confused because if heating veggies destroys vitamins and nutrients, how can they take all those wonderful things in fresh fruits and vegetables and put them in a vitamin pill?
That's a good question.
Tune in next week for a good answer. Get your questions in for our next round of Rapid Fire by sending us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have lots more coming up. Our recipe is next. Some more interesting research coming up. Our medical myth buster. And, of course, lots more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number, if you have a question for Zorba, is 800-462-7413. Callers waiting, but room for you at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, grilled turkey and garlic sauce. Mmm, it looks and smells and
it's
I'll
delicious.
Bet tastes
it's,
delicious.
It's delicious. Yeah, Adam made it and it's the whole studio is filled with the wonderful, intense smell of garlic. I even love turkey. Do you love turkey?
I like turkey.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't tend to make it as much because it's a large bird and, you know, go well, it's celebration. And it's interesting because the consumption of turkey, if you go back 100 years ago, was greater, much greater than it is now because it was more available.
Well, now you have turkey at Thanksgiving and maybe at Christmas.
Right, but turkey is great. And, you know, the small turkey birds are easy to make, and then you've got sandwiches for 2 or 3 days. And also, you can buy turkey breast in the store, and turkey breast, like chicken breast, is white meat. It's great. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I mean, so it's time to start thinking about turkey, not just chicken in terms of poultry. And, you know, for, as the number one meat in America, we eat more chicken now than we do beef. And yeah. And frankly, turkey should be in that mix because a variety of foods give you a variety of nutrients. So I'm a big turkey person. And this is a disclaimer: I do not own stock in the turkey lobby. So it's a non-disclaimer.
Right.
Okay. So let's start out with first of all the garlic sauce. Start out with 1/3 cup of minced fresh parsley.
1/3 cup of minced fresh parsley.
Now, when I was in college, I used to use dried parsley. Don't use dried parsley. I mean, it's not really very good. It's okay as a dried herb, but it doesn't compare to fresh parsley, which has a wonderful smell to it when you mince it. It's got to be minced fresh parsley. Mm-hmm. 5 cloves of garlic. If you are a garlic lover, it can be 10 or 15 cloves of garlic. I put in 5, but believe me, I use more garlic all the time.
And you mince that?
And you mince it. That's exactly.
Okay, a lot of minced garlic.
I cannot imagine life without garlic.
All right.
1/3 cup of fresh lemon juice.
1/3 cup of fresh lemon
juice. Now, fresh lemon juice is far better because as soon as you open it up, it has a wonderful aroma to it. It'll taste better. If you don't use fresh lemon juice, use the frozen. The frozen that you defrost in the refrigerator is far better than the reconstituted lemon juice that you find simply sitting in a jar on the shelf. So, fresh is best. Frozen number 2. Frozen is always next to the frozen orange juice in your grocery store, and and the reconstituted, I would say, is a distant third.
Okay.
1/4 cup of olive oil.
1/4 cup olive oil.
Teaspoon of paprika.
A little paprika.
That's right. Now, sometimes what you do is you get a jar of paprika and you keep it on your shelf forever. It's not very good because it's kept on forever. Once you open it up, it lasts for maybe a year and then it begins to lose its aroma and then all it has left is the sandy taste of paprika. My recommendation is buy a high-class, really good paprika in a small bottle and use it, and you can put the date on it if you want to, but after a year, get another small bottle. because unlike other dry herbs, paprika, which is a dried pepper, loses its aroma after about 6 months to a year. And it really will add a different taste to this. So good paprika.
That's interesting because you don't use paprika all the time.
That's right. That's right. And you have it on the shelf and you go, well, it doesn't add much taste. And that's because you're using old paprika. That's why it doesn't have much taste to it.
Okay.
There's a teaspoon of cumin.
One little tea cumin.
That's right. Cheapest place to buy cumin is often in an Asian grocery store or in a Mexican grocery store. They sell them in large amounts. When I look at cumin in my regular grocery store, it's about four times the cost of an Asian or a Mexican grocery store, any kind of a Latin grocery store. That's where you get your cumin. And cumin lasts for a long time, by the way.
Okay.
A half teaspoon of cayenne pepper.
Half a little tea cayenne pepper.
And if you want it hotter, add a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Okay, now for the meat, 1.5 pounds of turkey breast slices. Cut about a quarter of an inch thick.
A pound and a half of turkey breast slices, about a quarter of an inch thick.
That's right. And one tablespoonful of olive oil for brushing the turkey.
A big tea olive oil for brushing the turkey.
And remember, the oil that we're using in the recipe, we've got a quarter of a cup of olive oil in the garlic sauce, and we've got a tablespoonful of olive oil. I like extra virgin. Olive oil is good oil. That's the oil we want to have. So let's prepare. Combine all the sauce ingredients in a blender and prepare it together. That's minced parsley, garlic, fresh lemon juice, olive oil, paprika, cumin, and cayenne pepper. Grill or broil the turkey breast, brushing with the olive oil to keep it moist, about 4 minutes on a side until it's totally cooked. Then top each slice with about 2 tablespoonfuls of the sauce and enjoy. It's delicious. If we look at the calories, it's 228 calories, not a lot of calories. Some of those calories, of course, come from the fat, which is the olive oil. Bon appetit. It's absolutely delicious. And Tom, you're going to have the first taste of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have the second taste.
Very spicy with that garlic. And
The garlic is spicy. This is delicious.
Very good. Now, what absolutely would you serve this with?
Well, I would serve it with white wine. I'd probably use my favorite Wollersheim Perry Fumé, which is in Wisconsin. I love local wines. I love local wines all over the country because you support local people. Because it's turkey, gives me a chance to finally eat cranberries again. I happen to love cranberries, and I love the color of cranberries.
Maybe some veggies on the side?
No veggies, maybe some roasted root vegetables, which would be great on the side. Root vegetables, especially in the wintertime, is really a good time to take out the root vegetables and to kind of roast them. I think this is delicious.
Yeah, and so, anybody who would like to have this recipe can find it on our website.
That's right, at zorbapastor.org. You can find this recipe, you can archive. Go to our archives, find our other fine recipes, and you can sign up for our weekly podcast.
Our toll-free number. Question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, here's a listener with us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine. How can we help you?
About a year ago, I had emergency gallbladder removal surgery. And ever since then, I've been doing pretty well. I've had a few side effects, some dumping syndrome. And I'm getting conflicting issues about what my diet should be post-gallbladder removal.
So when you say dumping syndrome, tell me a little bit about what your symptoms are. I think that most people in the country do not know what dumping syndrome is.
I have no idea.
Okay, I was just trying to be polite. What that is about 15 or 20 minutes after consuming a meal, extreme diarrhea.
Right. And that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if it's a higher fat-based meal, which I've been trying to avoid lately.
See, what happens is the gallbladder is a storage sac. It's a storage sac for bile. Bile is an emulsifier. It emulsifies the fat that basically is in our gut, helps us digest fat. That's really that's what it does. And gallbladder has a tendency to have gallstones and get inflamed. Sometimes it gets infected. And basically, when you have your gallbladder removed, what happens is bile just goes continuously into the gut. And it goes continuously in there. And it turns out that's okay. We don't need our gallbladder. The bile is there when we actually want to absorb the food. And the body recirculates all of the nutrients, basically, if you will, that are within the bile. Now, for some people, after they have gallbladder surgery, they have something called dumping syndrome, which is where they have an exaggerated response, increased peristalsis, which is movement of the gut, and that then produces diarrhea, and it can become a chronic problem. Tends to happen with a higher fat diet, but it also tends to happen with individual foods. So one of the things you want to do is find out what foods do it, find out how many foods do it, the mass of food, and then find out if there's a time of the day issue. So you say high-fat diet, what foods have you noticed tend to produce this?
Definitely anything fried, so I've been completely avoiding that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything with too much tomato, which breaks my heart because I love that, or garlic.
I think I would look back at the tomato thing. The fried thing makes a lot of sense. Fried foods are there. That means, by the way, you can't come to the state of Wisconsin. We fry everything. We have fried cheese curds. The other day I had a fried dill pickle spear, and I thought everything is fried. Before you know it, we're going to have fried Cheerios that we're going to have. We have fried Twinkies here. So you're not allowed to cross the state line into the state of Wisconsin. You'll starve. But if you're not in the state of Wisconsin, you can avoid fried foods. And one of the issues that you have is fried foods are okay to avoid, but fruits and veggies are different. What I would do is I'd look back at the tomato issue and discover whether or not it's a quantity of tomato issue. In other words, you may find you can tolerate some sauce, but not a lot of sauce. So you may find, yeah, I can have a serving of spaghetti with tomato sauce, but I can't have pizza because it either has different spices on it or it has a different sauce on it. So I'd look back in the vegetables. The problem is dumping syndrome also can just occur. It just happens with any food that we eat. So some people then start to limit their foods so much that they begin to believe that there are only certain foods that they can eat, when in fact it's a random event and you start to attach it to every single thing that you're eating. So I'd look back at the tomato sauce issue, and basically staying away from fried foods, that's not such a bad idea.
That's true. I've lost like 12 pounds in the last 2 months by avoiding that.
Yeah,
so
it's not such a bad idea. You may also find that if you want to have sautéed foods, for instance, one of the things that we love in our house is a tilapia on a very, very light breaded sauce and a very, very, very light breading. So we buy a breading in Chicago called Jake's Breading, which we love. And what I will do is take the tilapia and I will put it in milk and then put this breading over it. I take a Teflon pan and I spray it with a nonstick olive oil spray and I saute it. I have hardly any fat now in there, but I have enough in there to actually coat and make it taste like as if it's not fried, but if it's lightly sauteed fish. And that you'll probably tolerate. So be inventive. One of the other things I would do is go, there are a variety of different ways of looking at dumping syndrome, but learn about it, find the foods that work, and begin to become a chef for those foods that you can tolerate.
Okay. I had not thought of that. That's
yes.
That'll be very helpful.
Good luck to you.
Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you so much for the call. Zorba, time for another edition of Stump the Doc now. This question comes to us from a listener who's generally cooking for one and has to reduce ingredients in most recipes. How do you have one egg?
You don't. That's the answer to that. You can't have one egg. I mean, one egg is okay. Most people, when they eat eggs, they have two eggs. They don't. Oh, he's talking about in a recipe.
In a recipe.
Well, you know what you would do? Well, that's a good question. What I would do is I'd buy a small egg. That's what I would do. Recipes are usually made for regular eggs or large eggs. And a small egg is about 33% smaller than a large egg. So what you want to do is go to a grocery store that has small eggs, sometimes called pullets. I think they're called pullets. P-O-U-L-L-E-T, something like that. I know the grammar police are going to correct me, as well as the egg people. But small eggs.
Or maybe the spelling police.
Or maybe the spelling police. I don't know which cops are going to come to my house. I don't know. And frankly, I don't care. But a small egg is what I would do. Otherwise, it's very hard to divide it. You can't divide it into two. That would be hard. Small egg, good luck.
How about this? Double all the ingredients.
And use
one egg. If it calls for half an egg.
Data doesn't call for half an egg.
Well, then why are we talking about this?
Because he wants to make, or she wants to make a recipe, and it calls for an egg, and he's cooking for one, and he wants to make half the recipe, and he can't divide an egg in half. He can divide the other things there, and he doesn't want to waste money of having the recipe and have twice as much.
Does he or she have a fridge?
Small egg.
I mean,
You know what? In this day and age, you got to try to save money everywhere you can. Half an egg. Double the use of it. We all have our own thing.
Thank
Waste
you.
Not, want not, Ben Franklin.
I think you can stump Public Radio's favorite family doc. Send us your question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Research coming up. Interesting research next. We have our medical myth buster and more of your calls right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we'll take a few minutes talking about vitamin D.
Vitamin D for kids. You know, I've been a vitamin D supporter. Yay, go vitamin D for the last couple of years, especially since the article that came out in the Archives of Internal Medicine showing that women who had higher levels of vitamin D appear to have significantly less cancer. And we don't know if it's a cause and effect issue. We don't know if people who take vitamin D have less cancer or if it's a marker issue. People who have less cancer just happen to have lower levels of vitamin D. And there are good studies going on. We don't have that answer yet for sure. And a lot of supplements like vitamin E have fallen to the wayside. But this is vitamin D in children. Mm-hmm. And it appears that children are significantly deficient in vitamin D. Now, we know that small amounts of vitamin D get rid of rickets. We don't see rickets anymore. So minimal amounts of vitamin D are necessary. Kids who are out in the sun will not get vitamin D. We know that vitamin D in rickets was a big issue. And it turned out that 100 years ago, Babcock at the University of Wisconsin and other researchers at the University of Wisconsin worked on vitamin D in milk. So we don't see rickets. But we do see soft bones in kids, and the recommendation now is to double the amount of vitamin D.
Yeah, well, I didn't know there was an amount. What's the amount?
The recommendation that's come out for the last 5 or 10 years is about 200 units a day of vitamin D, and now the recommendation is going to be 400 units a day. That's the recommendation. It hasn't been approved yet by the FDA, but you really need maybe not 200 units a day, but you really need to have about 400 international units a day. And to do that, you would have to actually drink 4 glasses of milk, and most kids do not drink 4 glasses of milk a day.
This is kids from what age?
Babies on up. Now, breast is best when it comes to feeding an infant, but breast milk is notoriously deficient in vitamin D. There's not a lot of vitamin D in breast milk. So the recommendation is for the first year of life to supplement with a vitamin that also contains vitamin D and make sure that you give kids and infants vitamin D drops. Once again, these are beginning recommendations and exactly how much vitamin D we should
have.
This
is tough because it comes from the sun, and you don't know exactly how much you're getting from the sun.
Well, the sun is a big issue. You go out in the sun, you put on sunscreen, you're not making D. Because when you put on sunscreen, you are going to reduce the amount of vitamin D you're making. If you live in a northern climate like Wisconsin, you're not getting much D. And if you have dark skin, you're not getting much D. It turns out light-skinned people produce more vitamin D in there. So supplementation with D is going to be the way to go with kids, because it'll make their bones strong.
And they have drops for babies?
They're drops for babies. They're chewable vitamin D tablets. What you want to do is make sure you talk to your doctor about it. Recommendation now is vitamin D for children and infants. All of our kids should have more of it to make sure that their bones are good and strong.
800-462-7413. To Interlochen, Michigan we go now. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question. I was visiting my dentist, and there was a very handy and attractive chart on her wall that lists various kinds of soda or pop, and lists them in order of their acidity. And, of course, at the bottom of the list is battery acid, and next to that are various colas, and then you know, on up to plain water. So I asked her, what about just plain sparkling water? Plain carbonated water. I rather enjoy having carbonated water, sometimes with a little lemon or lime or something. It's really refreshing during the summer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll mix it with juice. And I actually drink soda pop fairly rarely. Also, I've had some interesting discussions with my wife over this same question. She sometimes thinks that that just carbonated water perhaps isn't quite as completely healthy as just standard water. And I don't think either one of us has any real data or evidence on this, so I thought this would be the question for Dr. Zorba.
That's the right
person, because, you know, probably it's the kind of thing that maybe more people than just the couple of us would be wondering about.
Yes, well, you bring up a very, very good issue. First of all, soda that's sweetened is sweetened, so we know that's bad for us. Why?
Right.
Well, it's got calories, makes us fat. Calories make us fat, and it's interesting. Diet sodas do not make us thin. We know that. We know that people who drink diet sodas on the whole are fat. They're overweight.
And from the dental standpoint, the sugar in the
sugar
soda
is bad for cavities. We know that. We know that when you have less sugar in your diet, you have fewer cavities. We know that sugar is really the primary issue. That's the primary issue that just sits there essentially when we do that. Sparkling water is just as nutritious or unnutritious. There's no nutrient in it, so you wouldn't really call it nutritious, as regular water. So the answer is yes, and all it has is carbonation from carbon dioxide that's put in the water that gives it that refreshing taste. Club soda is slightly different. It has a little sodium in it. There's a difference between club soda and sparkling water. It has a little bit of sodium because I find that there's a certain sparkling water that I love. It's Pellegrino water. And I thought, why do I like this versus club soda? Club soda has bigger bubbles. My wife thinks I'm nuts. When I told her, I said, I can tell the difference between the bubbles and one and the other. And she said, right. I mean, she doesn't taste the difference, but I, for some reason, can tell the difference. And I was discussing with it with a nutritionist, and she said, oh, yes, club soda has sodium and that they put in there. So you get a teeny bit of sodium in club soda, but if you look at sparkling water such as Pellegrino water, or you look at just carbonated, plain carbonated water, it's just as fine. And it's just water with carbon dioxide, and we belch it out, or it comes out somewhere else in our body when we drink it.
That's great. So the carbonation doesn't affect the pH level whatsoever?
Well, it may affect the pH level slightly. It does not affect the teeth. There's no evidence that sparkling water is bad for the teeth. The pH level may be different because you're adding carbon dioxide, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's slightly off. But pH is not just the issue. It's pH and sugar that are the issues. So it's safe to drink, safe for your teeth, so you can call your dentist and tell her that she can put a little thing on the bottom of that, a little sticky note, carbonated water is okay, according to Dr. Zorba.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank
Pleasure.
You very much. Pleasure. We appreciate the call. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today. It comes to us from Ian in Bloomington, Indiana. Ian writes, I was homeschooled all my life, so I was not in a school environment that is a breeding ground for colds, flus, lice, etc. Thus, I was not sick often. The myth is that if you, as a child, are not exposed to lots of diseases, that later in life, your body will not be able to fight sickness as well. I think the opposite is true. A healthy childhood equals a healthy life.
Well, I think you're wrong. And the best data for that comes from what killed off Native Americans when the Europeans came. And the answer is, to the best of our knowledge now, the common cold germ. And the reason is, when you come into contact with a variety of viruses in your younger age and you fight it off, you're less likely to get those viruses when you're older. And we know, for instance, if we look at other markers for major viruses, measles, chickenpox. Now, measles, there's not much a way around. There are not many cases of measles around because we vaccinate. But if you look at adults who got measles, they were at a really high risk of death if they got measles for the first time as an adult. It was really a very significant disease. If we look at chickenpox, there's a lot of chickenpox still around. We do vaccinate, but it's around. An adult who gets chickenpox, they often get pneumonia. Once again, very, very high risk for being very sick. Another good example is mono. Mono, which is the Epstein-Barr virus. We know that a lot of children get mono. If you get mono as an adult for the first time, you're often sick, you're tired, you're weak for months at a time. So the answer is no. Get those viruses while you're young. You're less likely to be sick when you're older. So a healthy child is not necessarily a healthy adult. A child who gets a variety of viruses all around is a healthier child. And just another thing, there's a theory that Autoimmune diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis, asthma, and allergies, which are on the rise, are present because children who are in a more sterile environment do not come into contact with a variety of bugs and bacteria and viruses, and as a result, they start producing antibodies to their own body. And the rise in autoimmune diseases may be because we keep our kids away from viruses. So no, send them out in the world and treat them when they're sick.
Yeah. Now, maybe I'm wrong about this, Zorba, but don't we tend to get fewer common colds as we get older?
Well, we do tend to get fewer common colds, but I'm not sure where part of this is because of the fact that we now have, you know, immunity to a lot of it. That certainly is one factor. But the other factor is you look at kids, when they get sick, they're kind of breeding houses,
yeah.
And little kids are very intimate with one another. They get right into the other's face. They've got mucus on them, and snotty-nosed children, they've got mucus on them, and they come into right in contact with other kids right in their face.
And younger adults, of course, are around kids a lot, too.
No, so younger adults are around kids, but you look at teachers when they first go into the classroom, they get lots of colds, especially of young children, but over time they get fewer and fewer. So part of it is your immunity, and part of it is the fact that they are not around you as much.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. A listener now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I was calling because for the past about 4 years, I've been having a kind of embarrassing problem. I've been burping quite a bit, and it seems to get louder and louder, and I can't figure out what's going on. It doesn't matter what I eat, when I eat, if it's fast, slow, I still end up burping constantly.
Any particular time of day, more in the morning or late at night? Or
same thing across the board, morning, noon, and night.
And it happens all the time or varies from day to day?
It happens all the time. Maybe I might have a slow day once in a blue moon, but it's pretty much every day.
A slow day. Yeah. In other words, a day that you're not burping too much. So
yeah.
So you're sitting at your desk and you're burping, you're going out with people. What happened? It must be embarrassing on a social situation.
It really is, and I've been trying to figure out what it is. It's certain foods that I'm eating, but I haven't seen a trend. It doesn't matter what I'm eating, when I'm eating, it happens.
Well, you know, it's interesting. People have a tolerance for certain things, and they have a complete intolerance for other things. So if you're in a wheelchair sitting next to someone, they don't mind. You know, if you've got a broken arm in a sling, they don't mind. But if you burp and belch and pass gas, they kind of mind. And they do. You know, they, like, what's wrong with you? Why are you burping? I don't burp, you know, unless you're a young teenage boy, you know, where they think it's
burp
funny
on purpose.
Laugh. When they burp on purpose, that becomes a different issue. Are you a gum chewer?
Yes.
Stop it.
Oh.
Stop it. You're chewing gum. It's one of the ways that you're putting, when you chew gum, you have saliva, you put air, and you've got to stop chewing gum. You are now a non-gum chewer. Stop your gum chewing. Stop it. Stop
okay.
it. That's not good. You chew gum all the time, a little at the time, but, you know, whatever it is, stop the gum.
Okay.
Stop the gum. Now, you don't wear dentures, right?
No.
That's also a cause because we get air in there as we're swallowing, so denture wears are a cause issue. Are you taking any acid reducers such as over-the-counter Prilosec or Zantac?
No.
Try it. See if that works. Sometimes reduction of acid in the gut will stop the burping and belching. I'm not recommending you necessarily take it for the rest of your life, but find out if it works. So go get over-the-counter Prilosec, 20-milligram capsules. Don't read the instructions which say, well, you can read the instructions. Talk to your doctor if you have to take this more than 2 weeks. They just don't want people taking it who might have, you know, other problems not to take it more than 2 weeks. But take it for a month, full month. How much caffeine do you consume?
Very little. I don't drink sodas, and I'm not a big tea drinker either.
So, because caffeine is sometimes the issue, and the other issue often is soda. Soda because it has gas bubbles, and the gas bubbles are in there. Those are the things I would try. It sounds like you've done your homework. Are there certain foods or certain amounts of foods that'll make a difference? Because sometimes the quantity or the type of food or the heatness, that's not a word. Grammar police will get on me for that. Whether or not it's hot food or whether or not it's spicy food can sometimes make a difference. But your problem might be gum.
Oh, okay.
Here's another suggestion. Spend a lot of time talking on the radio, because we've been talking for a while and you haven't burped once.
That's right. Thank you, Tom. And you haven't burped once.
Sure.
It's good. Tom has a good point there.
Very good.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you. You guys have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Zorba, you mentioned the grammar police. Here they come.
I have to tell you, before you say that, I was at an event the other day. I do a lot of community events. The first thing that somebody came up to is they said, my sister called up and she was the grammar policeman from Waupaca. And this person was just so smiling. And she said, do you remember what she said? And I thought, no, I don't remember what she said. And then she brought it up. And then, of
so
course,
you got corrected a second time.
I got corrected
on the
second
same
time.
Issue.
Second time.
Okay, well, here's Deputy Jack in El Paso, Texas. He writes, I love your show, but your explanation about overcoming a fear of fainting when faced with a needle repeatedly made a mistake, urging the man to lay down
before having
blood drawn. People do not lay down. They lie down. Chickens lay eggs. People lie down.
I will never get the lay and lie correct, let alone the laid or the lane correct. So, sorry.
If Zorba lays any more mistakes during a show, let us know by sending an email to...
That's very good. Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom, and stay well.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Try it 3 in the morning. 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, with assistance from his intern, Ann Tenna. Charles Monroe Kane is the executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1025Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.